Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, where I live, at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Paul Collins. We're going to be talking to him about the book, The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship. Now, the book is written by Philip Darrell Collins and Paul David Collins. Do we talking to Philip or Paul?
You'll be speaking with me tonight, Paul.
All right, fine. Well, that's what I thought we were going to be talking to you. Anyway, the book, The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship, an examination of the epistemic autocracy from the 19th to the 21st century. And, of course, most people don't even understand what an autocracy is and what you're really talking about. Would you like to explain to them really this scientific dictatorship that is being imposed on the American people so readily today?
Certainly. The book posits the idea that since the dawn of ancient civilization, the ruling class, the elite, have manipulated humanity largely through religious institutions and mysticism. But however, as the mist of antiquity receded and contemporary history advanced, the elite's theocratic power structure underwent an epistemic transformation. And the result of this transformation was the emergence of a scientific dictatorship, and that was a term that was coined by the Freemason Aldous Huxley, and he was basically recycling the ideas that his teacher, H.G. Wells, had placed in his book, The Shape of Things to Come, when he spoke of the technocracy. A technocracy is the concept of a government that has totally shed politics as we know it and has become a government ruled by an elite coterie of experts. And it was basically that same idea. The scientific dictatorship was the same technocratic idea. And the history and the background of the scientific dictatorship that we've seen emerging in our day and age, in particular a global scientific dictatorship that we see, which is will be the natural ends of this conspiracy, was created and micromanaged by the historical tide of Darwinism. Darwinism has little to do with objective science and more to do with socio-political aims and a political agenda. And in turn, Darwinism finds its origins, and most people don't know this, with Freemasonry, which is a philosophical scion of the ancient mystery cults that began in Mesopotamia, I'd say roughly around 6,000 years ago.
All right, and so I think it's so important that people understand that there have always been secret societies down through the ages. Not only that, but, of course, every governmental structure has tended to sort of justify its existence based upon a spiritual background. If you were a tribal chief, you had a witch doctor. If you were a leader in Asia, you had a shaman. If you were a pharaoh, you had your priests. If you were a king, or the Holy Roman Empire, you had the verification of your authority through the church. And, of course, this is how it's always worked down through the ages. We always had leaders that controlled the people. Until we came to America, where, at least initially, why the men were free. We had a very limited form of government. We did not have a monarch. But that's all changed as we've abandoned our Constitution and embraced the scientific dictatorship. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, And our guest this afternoon is Paul Collins. We're talking about his book, The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship. And I think it's so important that people understand that there is a master plan behind everything that's going on. And if you were to read the writings of people like Aldous Huxley, he lays it out very clearly. Aldous Huxley was a Mason. He was a member of the Fabian Socialist Movement. George Orwell described exactly what was going to happen. These were sort of negative utopias. Thomas More wrote a very glowing really a story of utopia, Edward Bellamy in the early 1800s, just about the time that the Fabian Socialist and the Second Socialist International were being established. Edward Bellamy wrote a book called Looking Backwards, which laid out this whole background for the World Socialist Movement, and what is really the organizing principle behind socialism, not only in America but throughout the world. But what people really don't understand is that behind all of this is an organized effort for a ruling elite to enslave the masses. Socialism is a sincere, benevolent, idealistic theory. But somebody has to be in control. That's the difficulty with socialism. It is not a matter of redistributing the wealth of the wealthy. It's a matter of controlling and destroying the middle class. Would that be a fair statement, Paul?
That is a very fair statement. What most people don't realize is that that communism is not about empowering the proletariat. It has a very idealistic garb wrapped around it, thanks in large part to Marx. But where does socialism concentrate the power? It concentrates the power in an entity that can be prostituted out to the ruling class, and that entity is government. And through government, different elites, such as Rockefeller, such as the Rothschilds, have regulated and restricted their competition out of existence. You will recall that attributed to Rockefeller is the statement that sin, that competition is a sin, and the best way to get rid of that is through an enforcement arm that is powerful enough to accomplish such goals, which would be government.
And of course, what people have missed when they ever talk about the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers or the DuPonts or the Fords or the Carnegies is that they were all involved in the occult. That is the most carefully kept secret, because behind all of these various movements and organizations we're talking about is the occult. Karl Marx was a dedicated Satanist. He was financed by a very wealthy man. His name was Friedrich Engels. He was commissioned to write the Communist Manifesto by an organization called the League of the Just. Of course, it's a secret society, and behind everything going on has been the occult. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest today is Paul Collins. One of the best books in my library is a book called Fire in the Minds of Men. It's written not by a right-wing extremist or some sort of a loony. It's written by the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington, one of the elite. But he points out, of course, that how people are so mistaken. They honestly believe the Enlightenment, the forces that are changing the world, came out of the French Revolution, the Enlightenment, these ideas of idealism. And he says that's not true. It all came out of the occult. The entire world revolutionary movement that began, at the time of the French Revolution and our own revolution, and continues right up until the formation of Russia in 1917 and Cuba's Fidel Castro's Cuba in 1959, it all came out of the occult. And it all began, of course, when the aristocrats started moving their candles from Catholic altars onto the Masonic altars, onto occult altars, and began embracing the occult. So this is what everybody has missed. And I think that Paul brings this out so vividly in his book, and I really want to thank you for writing this. It's so important that people understand the relationship between what's going on and Masonry and the other occult organizations. We have 2 million Masons in America. Six of our last 12 presidents have either been Masons or closely allied with Masonry in one way or another, and the average American has no idea what it's all about.
That's a correct statement. As a matter of fact, the one statement that you made comes directly out of Billington's book, that the socialist movement, the heart and soul, came from occult ideas when the aristocrats began to move their candles from churches to the Masonic lodges. That's That's right out of the Billington's book. And last time that we spoke, you named as one of the most important books in your library next to the Bible was Tragedy and Hope. I'd put Billington's book right on the number four list.
One of the five top books in my library, right?
Yes. The first book I would have is the Bible because it instills a spirit of discernment. The next two books would be Tragedy and Hope, then the Anglo-American Establishment, and then right under it would be Fire in the Minds of Men, because what Fire in the Minds of Men did was show that there was an occult strata, an occult aspect and component to the undercurrents of history, to the conspiratorial undercurrents.
And of course, Billington is a masterful historian. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's one of the elite who rules the world, but at least he recognizes the occult influence in the world revolutionary movement. Professor Quigley, who is brilliant, I mean, one of the greatest historians of all time, he had all of the facts. He was able to track the secret society that became the Council on Foreign Relations, its origin from the secret societies of England, but he never recognized the spiritual component to that, and if he had, why, of course, well, maybe it would have even changed his perspective had he realized that this whole conspiracy that he had uncovered had its origin in the occult. But he never did. That's the tragedy. And he was so close, and yet, of course, he missed it totally because he was coming from a totally secular point of view. I suspect James H. Billington is as well, but at least he was able to uncover this in his research, how all of these revolutionary movements that plagued the world in the 19th century had their origins in the occult. The French Revolution, revolution after revolution after revolution, and wars all founded in the occult.
That's absolutely correct. He lacked the revelation that Christians have, basically because he chose to take the secular path. But one thing that I will give to Carol Quigley is that he recognized the fact that there was a technocracy on the way, just like Aldous Huxley and H.G. Wells had prophesied. As a matter of fact, in Tragedy and Hope, Quigley stated, quote, that the experts will replace the democratic voter in control of the political system, unquote.
That's why we have the electronic voting, so there's no record. You just go in there, you punch the button, and then, of course, the results will come out exactly as they wanted to, not as you wanted to. It has nothing to do with democracy. We've lost control of the electoral process once they install those electronic machines, because once there's no paper ballot, there's no way to find out how people really voted.
That's true, but encapsulated in his statement is the very idea of technocracy. It's a situation where society is managed by a group of experts now, and such a society would lack any democratic institutions that we find in our constitutional republic, because all the decisions are made now by the experts, and there is no need for representatives.
But of course, they have to give this impression. They have to give the people the idea that we're really here to serve you, whereas the truth of the matter is we're here to serve them.
That's correct. As a matter of fact, later in Quigley's book, he makes a prescription to the elite. He says, look, you have to make this a stage-managed event where the two different opposing sides look different. At the top, they are indistinguishable, however, and it looks like you're just throwing the rascals out and replacing them and making a change, when the truth is that it's standard operating procedure as usual behind the scenes.
And that's page 1247 and 1248 of Tragedy and Hope, one of my favorite quotations. So they can throw the rascals out every 4 years and nothing will change.
That's correct. The book is a very large book and it's very dry history, and so I suspect that Quigley never expected the average man to read it, so he's very glib and very honest and very straightforward in the book, and that's why it's important for people to read it, because he's candid and upfront with you, whereas other people use semantic distortion and semiotic deception and try to hide their agendas. He made no secret of it. He said that the only problem he had with the whole thing was that it was being kept secret.
And, of course, he thought this was a wonderful idea. He believed in this idea of a ruling aristocracy. He looked upon people like you and I. He wrote his book in 1966, 2 years after the Goldwater election. He referred to us as the petty bourgeois who voted for Barry Goldwater. And he used that phrase several times in his book. Why? Because he is one of the elitists who believes that we need a ruling elite, because us common folks aren't really very smart, and we don't know what's good for us. And he really wanted this. You know, he was part and parcel of it. He was never part of the inner circles of the secret societies, but he had an opportunity of going through the records of the secret societies. He wrote beautifully about them, and we're indebted to him for his research. He's far smarter than I will ever be. But of course, his one failing was he had no humility, and he had no love of God.
That's correct. That's correct. But this Wellesian vision of society ran by experts that he spoke about in his book, it didn't die. Its title and terminology has simply been modified for the modern day. Frank Fisher, who was the associate professor of political science at Rutgers University, recorded the change in title and terminology in his book, Technocracy and the Politics of Experience. And in that book, Fisher stated that technocracy's future evolution had been theorized and hailed in the modern day under the banner of post-industrialism. And Fisher said that this post-industrial mask for technocracy began in the 70s, and indeed it did, because in May of 1974 there was a report put together by Willis Harmon, the Stanford Research Institute's director, and it was entitled The Changing Image of Man. And that's the book, that's the report that became the heart and soul behind Marilyn Ferguson's Aquarian conspiracy. And in that report, it called for the discarding of the image of an industrial and technological man, and that is pure post-industrialism. And what do we see today with the environmental movement, which are really watermelon socialists? They're green on the outside, red on the inside. We see this call for the tearing down of national infrastructures and technology that raises the standard of living in the name of saving Mother Earth.
And you know, it's really so amazing that the American people just can't understand what's going on, why the price of oil is going up. It's going up because they want to force you out of your cars. You think $50, $55 a barrel is high? You haven't seen anything. It's all engineered. Well, back in the 1930s, Adolf Hitler was able to make oil out of coal. We've got 500 years worth of coal, but we don't know how to do that. When I lived in South Africa, they had Sasol. They were able to make oil out of coal. Oh, we couldn't do that. You know, it's just would be too polluting, and we can't use nuclear energy, so we have to use natural gas to generate electricity, and that, of course, has tripled the price of natural gas. Why? Because they want you to be cold in the wintertime. They want to lower your living standards and raise the people in the impoverished countries, and they're going to do that. They know exactly what they're going to do. They blocked the nuclear energy here. Every other country in the world, first country, has that. Oh, we don't know what to do with this spent fuel. Well, why don't we do what every other country does? We reprocess it and make more fuel rods. Oh, we couldn't do that. Congress passed a law. It'd be illegal to do that here in America. It's all contrived. There's plenty of oil above the North Slope, Alaska, but they blocked going into that, tapping into that. And we're talking about pools of oil that certainly exceed what they have in Saudi Arabia. Well, let's get back to what's going on today, because this technological dictatorship really does have a plan to lower our living standards, doesn't it, Paul?
Yes, it does. The Changing Images of Man report really lays out a lot of it. And once again, that was put together by Willis Harmon. It also involved such moral degenerates as Margaret Mead and B.F. Skinner of the Operant Conditioning fame. And that report makes it clear that the inadequate images of man can be done away with by moving society off the industrial course and onto a course that the report refers to as spiritualism. And spiritualism has nothing to do with the biblical traditional faith, and has everything to do with occultism.
And of course, these things are all carefully planned. They know exactly what they're doing. It's just that, of course, the average individual doesn't. The ministers certainly aren't telling the Christians. They're not getting it from Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity. They're played not to reveal but to conceal the truth. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Paul Collins, his book, The ascendancy of the scientific dictatorship. Ladies and gentlemen, it's on its way. It's coming in the name of fighting terrorism.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000. 4,000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. Or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Paul Collins, and we're talking about his book, The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship. Paul, how can people get copies of your book?
Copies of the book can be obtained through Amazon.com and through Barnes & Noble's website, barnesandnoble.com. It can also be acquired at www.iuniverse.com. Or you can just go to your local bookstore, ask them to order it, and they should be able to get it in.
All right, I think it's important that the American people understand that this is what the No Child Left Behind program is all about. It's not about teaching children how to read and write and arithmetic. It has to do with changing their attitudes and their values and their beliefs, and that's what it's really all about. That's why, of course, our founding fathers did not want a federal control of education, because they knew it would be a pathway to dictatorship. And that's why Ted Kennedy wanted this. But, of course, he couldn't get it through. It had to be put through by a Republican administration. It was Ted Kennedy's legislation that George W. Bush got passed here. But if we really analyze what's going on, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the policies of the two major parties. Oh, yes, one professes to be pro-life, but, of course, he given far more to population control than the Democrats ever could. The Democrats never could have increased the spending to $480 million a year for population control and family planning throughout the world. Only the Republicans could do that because they're pro-life. We all know that. So let's pick up the story from there, Paul. Certainly, H.G. Wells is one of the major architects of this whole idea, wasn't he? Who was H.G. Wells, and why is he such an important player in this whole move towards the scientific dictatorship?
Well, Herbert George Wells was most responsible for laying out the elite's blueprints for a worldwide oligarchical system. I'd say he's the most the individual most responsible, because in 1933, he wrote a book that was entitled The Shape of Things to Come, The Ultimate Revolution. And in that book, he envisions the world being run by a small group of scientists that he calls the technocracy. And as I explained earlier, technocracy is a situation where society is managed by a group of experts. So the democratic institutions that we find in a constitutional republic are essentially thrown into the trash can. And another individual that was close to the elite, you and I know, Carol Quigley, also prophesied the coming of a technocracy in his book Tragedy and Hope, when he said that the experts would replace the democratic voter in control of the political system. And the idea of technocracy is still with us today. It's just carried on under the banner of post-industrialism, and that changeover happened in 1974 with Willis Harmon and his report, Changing Images of Man. And one of the things that they found that had to be done to discard the image of an industrial man and to bring in the image of a post-industrial man was the promotion of what the report called spiritualism. And like what I said before the break, the spiritualism that's referred to in Changing Images of Man has absolutely nothing to do with the Bible or traditional faith. Industrial progress, as a matter of fact, was motivated largely by the Lord's command in the Bible to humanity to subdue the earth and have dominion over it. And this command appears twice in the book of Genesis. First to the parents of humanity, Adam and Eve, and then to Noah shortly after the flood. And Wells spoke of spiritualism and referred this idea of spiritualism. He spoke of it years before Changing Images of Man in his book The Open Conspiracy. And in that book, Wells stated that the old faiths had become unconvincing and unsubstantial, insincere, and that there was the beginning of a new faith in the world. And in Chapter 3 of that book, he begins to delineate this new faith. Chapter 3 is entitled The Need for a Restatement of Religion. And in that chapter, Wells lays out what he calls a modern Bible scheme. It's basically an idea for something that will become a substitute Bible for humanity. And according to that scheme, The book of Genesis would be replaced by his book, The Outline of History.
Well, I think that what we need to know is that H.G. Wells was part of a little group. It was called the Coefficients. It met from 1901 to 1909. It's described in his book, An Experiment in Autobiography, where the leaders of the Fabian Socialists met with the leaders of the banking community in England to plan our future. And the wars, which of course have plagued us ever since. And you can check that out, an experiment in autobiography by H.G. Wells. But of course, Rush Limbaugh is going to tell you about that. They planned, of course, everything that's happened since then.
side, and one of the tapes is an interview with a Dr. Dunigan who heard back in 1969 actually a talk given by Dr. Day, who would later become the president of Planned Parenthood. And Dr. Day laid out the whole plan for America. The fact there are too many people, the fact that we're going to have to create new diseases, the fact that we're going to have to conceal some of the very obvious treatments for cancer because people are going to have to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. An incredible interview and a series of other interviews that will go into the background of what is happening in America, why new diseases are cropping up all the time. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of our four-tape set, Genocide. It's vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I want to mention that we're having just a week from Saturday, that's the 6th of November, Saturday the 6th of November, an all-day-long seminar at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and of course lunch is going to be served. We're bringing in outside speakers. Joe Schimmel will be there, and he has a talk like you've never heard before, going into the background of how music is being used to transform our society and bring in the New World Order. And, of course, Michael Shaw will be there, explaining what this whole idea of sustainable development is all about. If you substitute the word dictatorship, you'll understand. Michael has been leading the movement here in the Monterey Bay area to expose Agenda 21 and, of course, what these people are really up to. Bill Sardi will be talking. I'll be talking. Great program all day long. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have a reservation because we're serving lunch, but give us a call. Hope you can make it. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Paul Collins. His book is The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship. And, of course, as you go through this, you go a little bit into Mikhail Gorbachev. And Mikhail Gorbachev, of course, everybody knows, was the dictator of Russia. People have forgotten he was also the head of the KGB. He, of course, supposedly was deposed, came to the United States, set up a foundation, and who were the co-chairmen of his foundation? Any of you would like the copy of the directive, the material that was put out by the State of the World Forum? Why, it was George H. Bush, George Shultz, right down Ted Turner. These were all co-chairmen of a foundation, State of the World Forum, set up by Mikhail Gorbachev, who is really one of the rulers of this world today. He, of course, works very closely with Maurice Strong and of course, with Stephen Rockefeller, all fabulously wealthy people, planning your future in mind. But if you'd like to get that directed, this actually came from the State of the World Forum. You'll actually see the names of the people involved, the presidents of companies all throughout the world and countries throughout the world. You'll be amazed at the list. We'll be glad to send it to you free of charge if you just give us a call and ask us for the Gorbachev list. Gorbachev is deeply involved in the occult. What's your take on Gorbachev, Paul?
Well, Gorbachev, whether he knows it or not, and I believe that he is very much aware of what he's doing, is one of the individuals that is bringing about Wells' plan for a modern Bible scheme. He's helping bring into existence a new spirituality that is supposed to replace the Christian faith. Now, in Wells' book, he suggested replacing the book of Genesis with his book, The Outline of History, and That book basically replaced the Christian account of the universe's beginning and development with the Darwinian doctrine that Wells had learned from Thomas Huxley, the man that's known as Darwin's bulldog. What Mikhail Gorbachev is doing is very similar. He's trying to replace the ideas of where we came from, and those ideas of man's origin that are found in the scripture, in the Bible, in the Islamic religion, in Judaism, with an occultic belief that involves Darwinianism.
And, of course, Gorbachev, this whole idea that he was deposed, this whole thing is as phony as a $3 bill. He had actually taken out his papers to form the foundation here in California 6 months before the phony revolution in Russia. It's all perception. The invisible hand that guides all of this creates these issues, creates these tragedies, creates these revolutions or wars. You know, they're all manipulated. They're all created to manipulate our reality. And we'll run down the street just supporting whatever our leaders tell us, because, of course, it's the patriotic thing to do without realizing that they simply are carrying out and playing their part in this great scheme, this great play that is being enacted throughout the world today. So you really get into your book a little bit about Afghanistan. What's your take on Afghanistan?
Afghanistan is an example of imperial mobilization that was laid down by Brzezinski as the idea for moving forward with global dominance. Now, Brzezinski had a book called Between Two Ages, and in that book he once again recycled the old Huxley-Wellsian idea of a technocracy, but he wanted to avoid using that term because of all the negative of connotations that it carried with it, and he used the term technotronic era, but it's basically the same thing. Now, how do we get to a technotronic era? Well, first we have to transform America into an empire and move it away from being a republic and into an empire not unlike Rome, and that empire would become the stepping stone to a world government that had at its core a technocracy. And in his book, Grand Chessboard, he lays out the plan for changing America into a world empire, but it called for what he said was a widely perceived external threat.
Was the only way you were going to get the American people to go along with the changing of our foreign policy is if there was a widely perceived external threat. We had to perceive, we had to believe that there was really an external threat to America. That's the words from his book, aren't they?
Oh, yes, that's exactly the words. He played no small role in creating that external threat when he began to work at radicalizing the Afghani population.
And don't forget, he toppled the Shah of Iran and brought those radical clerics there in Iran to power. Why would he do away with our friend, a man who is friendly to America? Maybe he wasn't a perfect ruler. Few dictators are. But why would you destroy a friend and bring an enemy to power unless you were looking down the road to creating the best enemy our money could buy?
That's exactly what he was doing. He knew that eventually America was going to need an enemy to act as a pretext for the erection of a global empire that would become the world government that he was hoping for, which would be the technotronic era, which is nothing more than a technocracy. It's interesting to note how many authors and how many historians see the whole Afghani freedom fighter Mujahideen movement that was radicalized and was anti-American as being obsolete in the war against communism, that communism was going to fall without their help. And the Central Intelligence Agency knew this, Brzezinski knew this, and yet they still continued to fund them. They still continued to give them the aid and to promote these radical ideas amongst their clerics. And so that just tells you that there was another agenda at work, and that was creating a future enemy that would be used to promote the idea of an American empire that in turn would become a world government that in turn would be ruled by a small coterie of experts known under various appellations. For Wells, it was the technocracy. For Huxley, it was the scientific dictatorship. For Brzezinski, it's the technotronic era. It's the individuals behind the technotronic era.
And I think it's so interesting, any of our listeners out there who don't think that we created this whole radical Islamic movement, admitted it was latent within the Muslim religion, but it was pretty well inactivated. There are very, very few followers of this radical form of Islam, other than within the Wahhabi clerics in Saudi Arabia and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. But they had essentially no following until we began to promote it. And anybody who doubts that we spent $51 million on textbooks in Iraq, in Afghanistan, to give to the children, to the madras schools there, to indoctrinate them in the radical form of Islam, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a copy of the Washington Post article, The ABCs of Jihad, How We Indoctrinated a Whole Generation of the Youth of Afghanistan in the Radical Form of Islam, and they joined the Taliban, and then we could slaughter them. Killed 31,000 of them in just a few days, few weeks, there starting in October. Wasn't that a great victory? 31,000, we didn't lose it. I think one or two men. Great military victory of these young people that we'd indoctrinated in this radical form of Islam. Why would you do something like that unless you were incredibly evil?
That's correct. And it must be noted that they went over there with the active encouragement of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Pakistani ISI. And the Pakistani ISI, by the way, is nothing more than really a surrogate of the Central Intelligence Agency. And some 35,000 Muslim radicals from 40 Islamic countries went over to Afghanistan between 1982 and 1992. And they were indoctrinated into this radical form of Islam. And if anybody doubts that and thinks that this is coming from a wide-eyed conspiracy nut, the individual that pointed that out was Ahmed Rashid, and he pointed that out in his article, "The Taliban Exporting Extremism," in none other than Foreign Affairs magazine, which is the flagship of the Council on Foreign Relations, one of the premier elitist conduits here in the United States. So this is not conspiracy theory. This is coming from their own lips and from their own quarters.
But of course, they can't let the American people know that. After all, our boys are going over there to fight the terrorists that we created.
That's correct. And their media machine is very loud right now, diverting people's attention away from these facts and getting them to look at the surface only and the pretext that we went over there with, which is the war on terrorism. However, look at that term semiotically. It's important that people study semiotics and study the iconic and indexical meaning of signs and symbols and words. The war on terrorism is a semiotic distortion. Terrorism is something that has been with humanity for at least 6,000 years of recorded history. It's always been with us. It always will be with us. And therefore, the war against terrorism will be never-ending. And this is what they have had planned. The neoconservatives behind the Bush administration and the individuals who are behind the Kerry administration, if he should come into office, had this in mind, a never-ending war meant to bring about a world empire that would in turn fold and become a world government. And if anybody doubts that Kerry will not continue with the neoconservative agenda, consider that during the debates, the one country that he continually hit on and harped on as a terrorist country is Iran. And Iran has been a target for the neoconservatives along with Iraq. One of the individuals who has been calling for us to go into Iran is Michael Ledeen, an arch neoconservative, who wrote about how Machiavelli, Niccolo Machiavelli, in his book The Prince, was wonderful, and how the man was brilliant and a genius. And he tried to get our government to listen to Manuka Gurbanifar, who was one of these key players in the Iran-Contra scandal, when Gaurabanifar was saying that that Iran had nuclear weapons and that we had to go in there and take Iran out. And even though Gaurabanifar had failed two lie detector tests that were given to him by the Central Intelligence Agency. So the idea that Kerry is not going to follow the neoconservative agenda and that we will get off this road of imperial mobilization is absolutely ludicrous. You have to listen to what the man says, and we won't get off the globalization track either, because if he was on shortly after the first debate, Bill O'Reilly had Richard Holbrooke on his show, and Richard Holbrooke is part of the Kerry campaign, and Richard Holbrooke said that Kerry makes no secret of the fact that he is an internationalist and believes strongly in the United Nations. So this world government agenda will continue with Kerry as well. And people that are in either the Democratic or Republican camp are showing that they just don't have the cognitive abilities or the moral complexity that you would expect from a full-grown adult. It's quite sad. It makes you almost jaded that people are acting as childish as they are.
Well, the thing is, of course, that Paul, that nobody's telling them that there's not a dime's worth of difference, really, between the two candidates. Oh, they fight back and forth like cats and dogs, and like Abbott and Costello, like Laurel and Hardy, except they were funny. And this, of course, is deadly serious, because doesn't matter who is going to get into office, if we're going to continue the war, this move towards imperialism, towards empire, and it's only a matter of time before we're at war with Iran and with other countries throughout the world. And, of course, unfortunately, the Americans don't understand that many times when you attack other countries, sometimes, of course, the horror comes to your own country. And if we're unconcerned about what's happening to the civilians in Iraq, who's going to be concerned what happens to the civilians in American cities right after 9/11 we had the support of the world? Today, you look at the polls throughout the world, and America, at least the American government, is universally hated by 70 to 80% of the world's population. America has lost the moral high ground that we've once had. And it can only be regained if the American people will do their homework and understand everything is being manipulated, our reality has been manipulated. There are five mega corporations that dominate the media and essentially control what the American people think. If you want to verify that, Ben Bagdakian's wonderful book, The New Media Monopoly, we carry it. He is a professor of journalism at the University of California, or he's the professor emeritus there. He's been working at this since 1983 for 20 years. When he started, there were 50 corporations that dominated the media. Today, there are five. But I wonder why Rush Limbaugh doesn't mention that. Well, anyway, you know, as you look ahead, and of course you've done a lot of research on this, Paul, what's going to happen to America?
Well, what I see, I'm actually quite optimistic about what's going to happen. I see social change in the wind, and I see it beginning with this election. I think that that no matter who gets into power, that both are promising not to have a draft, but no matter who gets into power, we are going to see a draft somewhere down the road, because that's what is called for with imperial mobilization. Now, if you look at the Vietnam War, when they tried to begin a draft, it literally started this widespread dissent. And I remember when I was in high school the president's vice president at the time, George Bush Sr.'s vice president, Darren Quayle, came on the news saying, oh, we were all for the war, and we went out with patriotic fervor and went to the recruitment office. And I didn't question it. I was born in 74. Our ground involvement ended in 73, and in 75, Saigon fell. So basically, I was coming into the world at the very end of the whole thing. So I didn't question it at the time. However, what I began to read, and I began to speak to people that were activists at that time, that people that were in the military at that time, people that were on both sides of the issue at that time, and I found that when the government began to try to institute a draft, dissension began, And I believe that when they tried to begin a draft here in the United States, that this dormant spirit of activism that is in the American population will finally wake up.
Well, I think that what most people don't understand is that the No Child Left Behind legislation, there was a stipulation where the schools would have to turn over information on every student in schools to the government. Why? Why, of course, they want to track those students, and if they need them for military service, they're going to have them. They're going to certainly have to draft people into the medical aspect because there's so many casualties, increasing numbers of casualties. Well, Paul, thank you so much for being with us. I hope we can get you back on our other programs.
You did
a very good job. Once again, the number to call to get the book. Paul?
www.iuniverse.com.
Bye-bye, and God bless you.
Goodbye.
Now, most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes, and how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you really want to understand what's going on over in Iraq today, you need to go to their website. What is their website? Why, it's newamericancentury.org. It's the website for the project for the New American Century, and read all of their material. Pull it down, put it into a book, and sit down and go through it page by page by page, especially their treatise there. It's about 80 or 90 pages, called Rebuilding America's Defenses, where they talk about how we're not going to be able to rebuild our defenses unless there's a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. And then they'll tell you that the plan is to have our troops permanently stationed in the Middle East. And it doesn't matter whether Saddam Hussein is in power or not, we've got to have our stations permanently stationed in the Middle East and throughout the world. And how wonderful it is with the new technology, why we can even create diseases that will destroy specific races of people. Isn't that grand and wonderful? Now with biological warfare, we can destroy specific races. I wonder which races they want to destroy. Get their information. Now, if you want, of course, the shortcut to that, you can go to my website at radioliberty.com and pull down my newsletters on the Project for the New American Century, and it'll sort of help you as you go through their material to know where to look. But sometimes it's better if you actually can find these things on your own. Their website, Project for the New American Century. Who are these people? There are only 25 of them to begin with. Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, John Bolton, Assistant Secretary of State, a man named Liddy, who is Cheney's Chief of Staff, a man named Elliot Abrams. There are only 25. Today they control the government. I thought that we elected our representatives, or perhaps they are elected by somebody else. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when we have to remind our listeners out across America, Radio Liberty is primarily dependent upon people who listen to our programs and who believe in what we're doing, who value liberty and are willing to take a stand and sacrifice to help us, because we certainly couldn't do what we do 5 hours a day someplace in America on radio, 5 hours a day on internet. We're actually on, I think, maybe 6 or 7 different internets now, at least 5 different internets. We're on 4 hours a day on satellite, actually 5 hours a day now on satellite. We just picked up a new satellite in the morning and on our early morning program, and then 4 hours a day on shortwave. But it's all expensive, and, well, if you'd like to help us, we could certainly use your help. We'd appreciate your help. So our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a copy of our latest newsletter, this is the October newsletter, which gives you the history of the banking system in America and the secret society that was sent to the United States in about 1640 to take over control of our government. Why, give us a call. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of our October newsletter. If you want to know what's going on economically, you probably want to read our August newsletter. We'll send you a free copy of that. We won't send you two or three free copies because, well, we have to finance it. And we hope, of course, you're going to want to subscribe. But our August newsletter tells you what Warren Buffett's doing. He's a pretty smart man. He started out in 1956 with a $100 investment, and today his holdings in Berkshire Hathaway are worth $40 billion. Where is Warren Buffett investing? What's he doing? Well, I think it'd be wise to know, and that's our August newsletter. Now, you can go up on the web to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You have our permission to pull down all of our newsletters and copy them and help us to get the information out across America, because it's really up to you. We can only do a certain amount. To understand the war in Iraq, you need to get our video, Iraq, the Untold Story. That's Iraq, the Untold Story. And there's a syllabus that goes with that that gives you all the documentation of how we were enticed into all the phony wars of the 20th century. And you say, phony war? Well, the Second World War was a struggle to the death, and the brave men died, and they did die, and they were brave men. But who financed Adolf Hitler before the war? Who financed Adolf Hitler during the war? Who was it who kept the Japanese from surrendering? They'd been trying to surrender for 6 months, and we wouldn't let them surrender. Why? Why, if we'd let them surrender, we couldn't have had the Battle of Iwo Jima, the invasion of Okinawa. We couldn't have dropped those wonderful bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Hiroshima, the most Christianized city in all of Japan. And if you doubt that, you need to see the article that we have from the Chicago Tribune in August of 1945, the very day that the peace treaty was signed on the Battleship Missouri and the harbor there in Tokyo. You need to read that. You need to understand that the war was prolonged intentionally for 6 months because, of course, the more carnage, the more people would be willing to accept the New World Order, the New World Economic System, the New World Currency, and the New World Religion, which is this is what it's really all about. And this is why I think the book we talked about today is really so important, because you have to understand there are secret societies. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and, well, you need to get our catalog and look at all the various books and tape sets we get, and we have. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Remember, if you're coming to our conference on the 6th of November, we have to know this week because they're already asking us to put in that, tell them how many people are going to be coming as of Thursday, but I talked them into at least giving us until Friday let them know how many people are going to be there for lunch. All day, Saturday, November the 6th. Hope you can come. It'll be a great program. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. And then, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, because we're told to do that. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this battle, and we need your prayers. Until tomorrow, at the same time, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you.